So as we come into the Word today, I just want to make a few comments about the kind of shape of Christianity today and why sermons like the one we're going to engage with today can be challenging in our day and age. For one reason or another, Christians today have come to associate God primarily with emotional feelings. And so many Christians feel as though if there's an emotional sense, tingles on their spine, fluttering of their hearts, a sense of being caught up in something bigger than themselves, that's primarily an emotional experience. Christians tend to think that's when we know the Holy Spirit is in the room, when we have those kinds of feelings. And the church has done a good job of encouraging us to interpret our feelings in those ways. And certainly coming into the presence of God is an emotional experience. In the scriptures, it's usually fear. And we don't have that so much today, which makes me wonder if we're really feeling God or not. But this idea that emotion is the most powerful motivational experience we can have. Many folks feel that extreme emotional experiences are the primary way that our lives change. Extreme emotional experiences are the primary way that our lives change. There's an old story of Martin Luther, who he was walking down a road in a rainstorm and lightning struck next to him. And he was so terrified, he dove to the side of the road and he swore to God he'd become a monk if he survived the storm. And of course, the rest is history. He becomes a monk and then eventually a teacher and then eventually the Protestant Reformation follows in its wake. And we take that as the story. Yeah. See, if he hadn't had that terrifying emotional experience, the whole world would never have been changed. But here's the problem with emotions. Here's the difficulty. And people are experiencing this through drug addiction and addiction to stimulants like nicotine and to alcohol. They're experiencing this way. Emotions tend to make us slaves. They tend not to set us free. The first time a drug addict tries something, the dopamine's released in their brain and they have an emotional euphoric experience, and it can become so powerful they become a slave to seek after that emotional experience again. People can have experiences in worship with a certain kind of way of singing, and once they have that experience, they can't feel God in any other way, the same way a drug addict can't feel happiness in any other way. If I don't have that experience, I can't touch God. Emotions tend to diminish the normal experiences of our lives and addict us to powerful emotional highs. They tend to make us slaves. And most of the sins that you and I are subject to in this world are related to our addiction to emotional feelings. Jesus gives us another way to be free. He doesn't offer his people an emotional experience with him. He offers them truth, ideas. The truth of Christianity is that it is ideas that set humanity free. It's a new concept being introduced into the way you think that will really change your life. Not a new feeling. You've had all the feelings. If you're 12 years old today, you've had all the feelings. There are no other feelings. You've had them. Terror, happiness, mourning, sadness, tingles, heart attacks. You felt them. You felt them. That's it. They don't get it. There's no more. And if you're 12, you felt them as strongly as you ever will again. The rest of the adults in this room are chasing, trying to find the experiences you're having right now. They've never felt them the way they did when they were 12 ever again. They've never felt love the way they did the first time their heart was broken. They've never felt sugar the way they did the first time their little mouths tasted it when they were just a baby. They've never felt joy the way that you feel it when you go on Christmas morning to see those presents. They're chasing that. Some of them are doing drugs to get it again. You felt them all. There's no more feelings. But there are more ideas. There are more ideas that will set you free. Most of us are slaves because we do not understand truth. Jesus taught that it is the truth that will set you free. Today is a hard message because it's conceptual. It's an idea. But if you have ears to hear, this idea could change all of the way that you live your life. I'll be surprised if you feel anything, though. other than the feeling of dizzy confusion. Because that's how I felt. I was reading this and I'm doing the research and I'm looking, and boy, I wish you knew Greek and Hebrew today. Usually you don't need to, but wow, did it help. And I looked at the text and I was translating it and I thought, this is amazing. I can't preach that. That was my internal process. And so I said to the Lord this week, you know, why Paul? Couldn't you have chosen a dumber person? His brilliance is ridiculous. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, if you have those Bibles, we're going to be looking at verses 35 to 49 today. And for those who are able to do this, I'm going to invite you to stand for the reading of God's Word. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, beginning in verse 35, and I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version. But someone will ask, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body do they come? Fool. So obviously that question was meant to be a little sarcastic and snarky because of the way Paul responds to it. Fool, what you sow does not come to life unless it dies. And as for what you sow, you do not sow the body that is to be, but a bare seed, perhaps of wheat or of some other grain. But God gives it a body as he has chosen, and to each kind of seed its own body. Not all flesh is alike, but there is one flesh for human beings, another for animals, another for birds, and another for fish. There are both heavenly bodies and earthly bodies, but the glory of the heavenly is one thing, and that of the earthly is another. There is one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. Indeed, star differs from star in glory. So it is with the resurrection of the dead. What is sown is perishable. What is raised is imperishable. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a physical body. It is raised a spiritual body. If there is a physical body, there is also a spiritual body. Thus it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. But it is not the spiritual that is first, but the physical and then the spiritual. The first man was from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from the heavens. As was the man of dust, so are those who are of the dust. And as is the man of the heavens, so are those who are of the heavens. Just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we will also bear the image of the man of the heavens. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. I invite you to be seated. So that feeling that you're having is the feeling I had. It's disorientation. Like, we read this passage all the time at funerals, Pastor. Why do you skip those verses? I always skip those verses. You can't read that at a funeral. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. I have to bring us back a little bit to Hebrew and to Greek because that's the original language here. And Paul is dealing with some really complicated stuff. We keep going back to Genesis, and we keep going back to the word in Hebrew. You ready? I'm going to have you pronounce it after me. Nephesh. You say it. Nephesh. Nephesh. Nephesh is the word translated in the Old Testament as soul, or life, or self. Nephesh. I did a video. This is me talking. I apologize, but I wanted to help you with something visual. And so far, I can't write on a whiteboard up here, so I did this. Might be a little
loud.
In
the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, he created all things from nothing. And he determined to create a being in his image. So the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground. And he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And the man became a living being. So what the scriptures tell us is that humanity is made up of two parts. Dust, earth, the raw material of the universe, and spirit. And together the two become a nephesh, a soul, a living thing, a life. These two parts of humanity are extremely important to Paul. Dust plus spirit equals our current physical existence. At present, we are nephishes. the Hebrew would be nephashim. We are nephashim. Now, that calculation that I was doing there, writing on the... That was my iPad, if you wondered. But that calculation there is so important because the current existence of humanity, you here sitting today, are a combination of the raw material of the universe and the breath of God. And together they form you. You are a nephesh, the raw material of the universe, dust, and the breath of God. That's who you are. But that is not what you are destined to become. If that's what the sermon's about. And I remember I said to Jen today, I said, it's such an exciting sermon. The idea that Paul is presenting to us is so amazing. But I'm afraid that even those who understand what I'm saying are going to say, so? That's my fear. It matters to Paul, so it should matter to you and to me. That's all I can say. There's only one component part of who we are that differs in the resurrected body. In the resurrected body, our bodies are not made from dust. The whole sermon today is to figure out why that matters. But for Paul, it matters. As we investigate Paul's understanding of the resurrection body, we're going to discover three insights into the future promised to us in the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. We're going to look at the diversity of bodies, the division of the heavens and the earth, and the direction of creation. We're going to begin with the diversity of bodies. Look at verse 35. But someone will ask, how are the dead, which in Greek is the word nekros, which is corpse. But someone will ask, how are corpses raised? With what kind of body, soma, do they come? Fool, Paul says. What you sow does not come to life unless it dies. And as for what you sow, you don't sow the body that is to be, but a bare seed, perhaps of wheat or of some other grain. But God gives it a body as he has chosen, and to each kind of seed its own body. Not all flesh is alike, but there is one flesh for human beings, another for animals, another for birds, and another for fish. There are both heavenly bodies, we're probably here talking about the sun, moon, and stars, and earthly bodies, the stuff on the earth. But the glory of the heavenly is one thing, and that of the earthly is another. There's one glory of the sun, and another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. Indeed, star differs from star in glory. So it is with the resurrection of corpses. So Paul's comparison in these verses is an interesting one. So for Paul, he compares our present bodies to seeds. He says that right now you're more like acorns than like oak trees. So you and I right now are in some sort of seed form. The Bible loves this image. It talks about the earth as a womb. It talks about the coming of Jesus as birth. It talks about us as seeds that need to be buried in order to become what we're meant to be. Everything about the scriptures is that this word is a transitional place, a place in which humanity is conceived, but not a place in which we were ever intended to remain. And so that's over and over again, this is Paul's idea. This is one idea that could change your life. You're an acorn. You can't... That okay. We'll get back to that near the end of the message. Paul also makes, though, an additional observation, and it is astounding to me. I just sat and worshiped the Lord in this study this week as it dawned on me that what Paul said way back then with what they knew of the world is more true today than it was the day he wrote it. He makes this observation. Essentially, he argues that from the same raw material, countless numbers of bodies can be made. Paul's essential argument is that it's the same raw material that makes stars and moons and planets and frogs and trees and you. That's what Paul is essentially arguing. From the same raw material come many different bodies. Now, we know the truth of this claim. Now, Paul might have been thinking about the four essences in Greek philosophy, you know, fire and what am I missing?
Water.
There you go. How could I forget water? Anyway, earth, air, water, and fire. He might have been thinking about that. He might have been extrapolating from the creation narrative in Genesis that everything came from nothing, and so everything comes from the same nothingness, and God has to create that way. Whatever he's saying, we know the truth of this claim that he's making in much greater detail. We know what the ancients could never have known, that everything in this room, from you to the chair, to the book, to your hair, to the lights, are made up of the same fundamental particles, just arranged in different orders. We're all quarks and electrons and protons and neutrons, just arranged in different ways. That's essentially what Paul is saying. God took the raw material of the universe to make you. You are just like everything else in that way, except he breathes into you the breath of life. Here's a clip to help.
When I learned that I am the same,
might want to turn it up,
as the trees, as the grass, as the other animals in this biosphere held by Earth, I'm not separate and apart from them. I'm the same. I am uplifted because I am the same, not because I'm different. The atoms of your body are traceable to stars that manufactured them in the core, in the crucibles of the thermonuclear fusion inside the cores of stars. And these stars exploded, scattered these elements across the galaxy into the next generation gas clouds that then collapsed, formed star systems with ingredients that can now make planets, with planets that now have ingredients that can now make life. We are alive in this universe. And because our atoms are traceable to the universe itself, the universe is alive within us. You are special, not because you're different from the universe. You are special because you are the same as the universe. To me, that borders on spiritual. We are not figuratively, but literally stardust.
Now, of course, there's a bit of materialism in Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he's operating from that materialism in that clip. From a Christian perspective, we are not only dust. We are dust that God has breathed life into. We are dust and spirit together, a marriage of the material of this universe and the breath of God. Neil deGrasse Tyson seems to think that all life just is here in this universe. We understand that life actually comes from God, who is outside of this universe, and it's this universe is somehow tapped into that life by God's creative power, and so we're a little different than him. But there's something in what he's saying that resonates with essentially what Paul is arguing here in 1 Corinthians. There is a part of us that participates in the entirety of the universe, because from the same raw material that makes you and me, all of creation has been made. Well, so what? Well, for Paul, if that's true of the material bodies you're in now, it will also be true of the spiritual body in the resurrection. Let's keep going. We'll see where Paul heads. Let's look at the division of the heavens and the earth. Look at verses 42 to 45. So it is with the resurrection of the dead. What is sown is perishable. What is raised is imperishable. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a physical body. So the Greek there is psuche soma. So you don't care about that. But it's translating a Hebrew concept because Paul is Jewish. This is nephesh. Verse 44, it is sown a nephesh. It is raised a spiritual body. If there is a nephesh body, there is also a spirit body. Thus it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living nephesh. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. Is there any more complicated argumentation in Scripture that you've encountered? Not me. Paul seems to think that this would solve all the Corinthian problems. Guys, don't you just get this? Adam was a nephesh. Jesus is a spiritual body. That solves your problems. This will keep you from having sex with prostitutes, and will keep you from arguing about head coverings, and will keep you from arguing about charismatic gifts. If you could just understand this, then your whole life would change. And you're all sitting there like the Corinthians going, what? We seem to be returning to this again and again in this part of 1 Corinthians. But remember that humanity in our present form is composed of dust, the raw material of the universe, and spirit. And together those things become a nephesh. So spirit for the Hebrew people is life itself. It's the animating force of God. When God breathes spirit into dust, it gets up and walks around. When God breathes spirit into nothingness, and he breathes it by talking it. God doesn't do a lot of exhaling that don't include words. You do know that talking is a type of exhaling. This is the exhaling God does. He distributes information on the spirit, and that's what changes everything. He spoke ideas into nothing, and you came out of it. This is the power of ideas for God, right? The power of speech. And so God speaks into the nothingness, and galaxies are formed. He speaks into the dirt, and you are made. He speaks, and things are transformed. This is what God does. So we are partially that because the Spirit is what's giving us life. But we are also this universe because we're made up of dust. And what was dust, you and I become nepheshes when God's breath enters it. And that's how Paul wants you to understand. This is who Adam was. Adam is the raw material of the universe. The breath of God breathed into it, and he became a nephesh. That's who Adam was. And because we are all made in his image, because we came from him, we all share the same basic makeup. And this is how Jesus was incarnated among us in the womb of Mary, as a nephesh. Raw material of the universe, breath of God. Except you and I received the breath of God. This was God himself. The resurrected body, though, is made up differently. The source material of that body is not the raw material of this universe, quarks and electrons and protons and neutrons and the rest. The raw material of that body is spirit itself. That's the idea. It could change everything. And some of you are thinking, now, why did you make such a big deal a few weeks ago about the body part? Now you're saying we're ghosts? No, no. That's why we spent all that time on bodies. It is a body made out of spirit. And this is so important. And you go, well, what is that like? Well, we have a wonderful story. We have a picture of what the resurrected body will look like. It's the body of Jesus resurrected from the dead. Here's a story from the Gospel according to Luke. Oh, I should have given you that. It would have been helpful. Gospel according to Luke, chapter 24, verses 36 to 43. This is Jesus after he rose from the dead. This is the experience of the disciples with him. While they were talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." Now, they're in a locked room, and he just appears in the middle of it. That's why they're terrified here. Verse 37, they were startled and terrified and thought that they were seeing a ghost. He said to them, "Why are you frightened? Why do doubts arise in your hearts? Look at my hands and my feet. See that it is I myself. Touch me and see, for a ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see that I have." And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. While in their joy they were disbelieving and still wondering, he said to them, "Have you anything here to eat?" They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it in their presence. He's not a ghost, right? But they thought he was. They figured that this was some, I mean, he just appeared in a room that was locked. He must be a spirit now. But no, he has a body. It's clear that in his resurrected form, Jesus had a body, but a body unlike the one you and I have, sourced someplace else, and so different, and yet in form the same. He even ate in their presence, in his resurrected body. What Paul is telling us is that Jesus' body was composed of spirit. And spirit for the Hebrew people is life itself. I don't know if I can help you with this, but the second Adam, Jesus, the final Adam, after which all who put their faith in him will be made, he has become what was once raw material that life was imparted into, now becomes life itself that can impart life. Do you see the difference? The calculation has changed. The resurrection body is not dust with the breath of God in it. The resurrection body is spirit with the breath of God in it. It is a body sourced in God Himself. No intermediary material necessary. That should blow you away. And I know it probably doesn't. But it should. For Paul, in the resurrection, the dichotomy of the material and the spiritual will be obliterated. The division of the heavens and the earth within each of us will be removed. We have been dust with life breathed into it. That's what we are now. But those who place their faith in Jesus are destined to become what Jesus is, beings made in God's image, beings with bodies sourced not in the created universe, but in the Spirit Himself. It has unbelievable applications. I'm going to give you one. This is for the sciencey of you. One of the reasons we will never, on this side of eternity, travel at the speed of light is because of the material stuff we're made of. All of Einstein's theories tell us that if this material stuff approaches the light speed, there's going to be a mass problem. Things are going to go very wrong for you. You're not going to survive it. But if we're not made of the material stuff of this universe, everything changes. In the experience of Jesus, He appeared in a room. So we don't need transporters in the resurrected body because it's made from spirit. You don't need to transport the matter part of it. It's amazing. You start thinking about it. But let's move into our third point, which is the direction of creation. And this is where I think this will start to come together. And then I'm going to make some applications. I'm going to try to tell you why this matters and why, if just the people of our world could grasp what they're about to become, if they follow Jesus, it would help them so much with the struggles of this world. Look at verses 46 to 49. But it is not the spiritual that's first, but the physical, the nephesh, and then the spirit body. The first man was from the earth, a man of dust. The second man is from the heavens, from where God is. As was the man of dust, so are those who are of the dust. And as is the man of the heavens, so are those who are of the heavens. Just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we will also bear the image of the man of the heavens. For Paul, we must catch a glimpse. And this was our first sermon of this new year when I preached from Colossians on living out of the future. For Paul, we must understand what we are becoming if we are to live today out of and into our future in Jesus. Humanity was not created as we presently are to stay this way forever. Like acorns produced by an oak tree, the acorn contains within it, right, the roadmap to what it will become. In some ways, the oak tree is within the acorn. But the acorn is not the oak tree. The same is true of you. The scriptures tell us that eternity is in the heart of man. The blueprint of what you will be is in there, but it's not your form right now. That's what Paul is trying to say. Like acorns produced by an oak tree, the spirit within us will be created into a body that has the form of our bodies, but does not resemble its reality. Humans begin as dust, as nothing. We become nephishes, and we are intended to become life-giving spiritual beings. That's Paul's argument. Jesus shows us this road, and He shows us the road we must follow as we follow Jesus. So I couldn't resist.
For I am His force. And the power for all it is.
He's talking about the force.
Life creates it. Makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us. And binds us. Luminous beings though we, not this crude matter. You must feel the force around you. Here. Between you. Me. The tree. The rock. Everywhere. Yes.
Now, I hate to say it, but Yoda's wrong about most things in that speech. He's also a materialist. He's just like Neil deGrasse Tyson. He thinks everything's composed in the universe. He argues that life itself creates the bond between living things. We know that to be untrue because of Jesus. In this universe, we are connected to all things because we're made out of all the same stuff. And we're connected to all living things because the same God breathed life into all things that live. Those are our connection points. There's nothing else. But George Lucas stumbled into Paul when he wrote the word in that clip, "Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter." Now, of course, at present, we are a combination of matter and spirit. But we are destined to become beings with bodies sourced entirely in spirit. This is our future. And for Paul, this knowledge, this promise, this hope can transform the way we live today. There are a couple of books. Maybe you've read these. Have you read these with your kids? The Dragonfly Door, Dina the Damselfly. I was looking for another one. These are not the books that I grew up reading about dragonflies. And I'm going to tell you the story I read, but apparently it's out of print. Maybe it was too violent because it did terrorize me as a child. But it was written in the 70s. You know, some of you know what I mean when I say that. But these are two more modern adaptations of the same story that are a little more sanitized for kids. But in the story that I read as a child, there was a nymph that was living in the water. And when you're reading the story as a kid, I didn't know what it was. It was just a bug that lived in the water. And it told a little bit about his life. And he was, and then one day he started to feel odd and wrong. And something started to go wrong with his body. And he started to feel a pain in his skin. And he started to feel like he was coming apart. And he wondered if this is what it was like to die. And he felt the uncontrollable urge to climb up a stalk into the air, which he knew he couldn't do because you can't breathe air. He lives underwater. But he had to do it. And he was in such pain. He crawled out and he climbed up. And then when the air hit his skin, it was horribly painful. And he began to tear at his skin. And you see why they probably don't publish this anymore. And he tore off the shell. And he thought he was pulling himself apart. And then as he ripped off the skin, something came out. And he had a new body. A dragonfly. And this body was free of the water. And it could fly in the air. There's something like that Paul is talking about. Something like the caterpillar turning into a butterfly. Your experiences in this world, the way God's created it, the way things work are intended to teach you the gospel. And once you hear the gospel of Jesus, you can see it everywhere. You can see it in the transformation of a caterpillar to a butterfly or to a moth. You can see it in the transformation of a nymph in the water to a dragonfly. You can see it in the very pattern that humans to this day can't explain. Why do you sleep? No one knows. I mean, you can look up blog articles and you'll find people who think they know, but science is unsure. There are no chemicals produced in your brain asleep that are not produced at the same time while you're awake. You burn as many calories asleep as you do when you're awake. Your heart works just as hard when you're asleep as it does when you're awake. Your brain works just as much. There's no real change in EEG readings when you're asleep as to when you're awake. So why do you need to sleep if nothing is resting? So this is the question. Nobody knows, but I'll tell you, the scriptures give you a little picture as to why you fall asleep, because you're practicing dying and raising yourself and being raised from the dead. You practice it every single day. When you fall asleep, that's practice death. And when you wake in the morning, that's practice resurrection. God has been preparing every human on earth for this gospel. They practice it every single night, and yet they give him no thanks. They have no eyes to see it. The world is full of pictures of what's happening to you. Your own experience is full of it. And yet without the gospel, we can't see it. We don't have eyes to see. You too, as you fall asleep every night, are destined to die. But what Paul is saying to you is that is necessary if you are to become what you are going to be. Now, of course, the key is not to take life into your own hands. The caterpillar can't simply choose to turn into a butterfly by jumping into the mouth of a bird. A nymph can't simply choose to become a dragonfly by just crawling out of the water anytime it wants. The trick is to trust this process to God's hands. And that's why suicide is such a sinful thing, scripturally, when it's not
motivated by psychological issues, which I'm sure God understands. We need to trust this time to God. But in our lives and through our experience and in nature, this story is told over and over and over again. The story that something must die for something else to live. That some forms are transitional and others are permanent. This story is told all over creation, and it is the story meant to tell you what you are going to become. For Paul, these bodies must die if we're to become what we were created to be. And the kernel of what we will be is within you. It's the spirit in you will be what your body is made from in the new heavens and the new earth. And this should change everything. Let me just give you a couple of practical applications. So in our world today, there are a huge number of people, a growing number of people. And I don't think that it's new today, but I think people are finding new voice to express it, who look in the mirror and feel that the mirror does not adequately reflect who they are. They look at the material bits and pieces of who they are and they think something's wrong. This is not me. And they try, by manipulating the material, to better fashion a body for themselves that reflects who they believe they really are. Some people do it through cosmetic surgery. Some people do it through makeup. Some people do it through acne medication. Some people do it through gender transitions. All folks are feeling the same thing. And you probably feel it too when you feel like the person other people know is not who you really are. You might be afraid that they would see who you really are. You might wish that they would understand who you really are. But we all feel this disconnect, some of us much more poignantly than others. And given the extreme reaction some have to it, it must be quite powerful for some. But we look in the mirror and we know this isn't me. And so all we have access to is this physicality. And if I can just alter it in the right way, then I can find myself. And people can see on the outside what I feel I am on the inside. And then I'll be happy. Oh, people, that's not going to fix it. I mean, you can do it, but it's not going to fix it. It's not the solution. Putting on makeup is not going to do it. Getting cosmetic surgery to fix your nose is not going to do it. If I have a surgeon cut off this thing, it's not going to do it. It's not going to create that perfect union of who you are and what others see. It's never going to happen in this world, but it will happen in Jesus. He's the answer. This flesh is not your future, though your future is a body. But a body sourced in spirit and not in quarks. It really does make a difference. It can transform how we live to know that it's okay to not like what we are, because this is not how we will stay. It's okay to hate being an acorn, but you're not destined to be an acorn. So you can live with the frustration that you are not right now embodied as you feel you really are. God says, good, because that's not how you're supposed to stay. That's fine, but trust me that in my time, I will help you find the body that will be who you are. And I know who you are because I made you. And I will make you a body myself that reflects who you are. No surgeon can make it. No makeup salesperson can create it for you. No workout routine can sculpt it. But the God who breathed life into you will give it to you if you just trust him. This is the gospel of Jesus. And it's good news to those who know something is wrong. It can transform the way you suffer. They didn't want Yoda up there. It can transform the way you suffer. Because what Paul says is that these bodies must, as an acorn must, turn from green to brown and fall off the tree and bury itself in the ground, maybe get nibbled on by a few squirrels, if it's going to grow. So you too have to decay. You're getting older, some of you. You remind me how young I am, so you get a little back. And you're noticing, I'm already noticing, I'm 42 and I'm noticing that things don't heal as quickly as they used to, that I'm not quite as vigorous in running around with my kids as I was even just 5 years ago. And I know you're all saying, oh, if I could only be 40. You don't remember being 40. You're still thinking 40 was like 20 and it's not. So, but hey, you're old, I forgive you. So, but as you get older and you feel that body decaying and you feel the mind slipping and you feel the metabolism not what you want it to be and you feel like you can't do what you want to do, not only is that normal and natural, but that's exactly what has to happen if you're ever going to get the body God wants you to have. This body has to die. It has to decay. You have to experience the corruption of it. You have to be filled with a longing to be free of it. Some people feel it young. Others don't feel it till they're old. But it's normal, it's natural, and it's exactly what God intends to happen. Your death is simply the burying of a seed that will grow into something you cannot imagine. You must trust it to God's timing. But as you suffer, you recognize that this is part of my transition. And I don't know why some suffer more than others. You can take that up with God. But all suffer eventually. It can transform your rejoicing. Because in this world, we tend to really, really worship the flesh. And that's why I started with the comment about emotions. In this world, we really worship the flesh. We really worship the chemicals produced by our bodies. We really worship the dopamine that's released when we feel euphoria. We really worship the nerves when they're stimulated and we feel tingles on our spine. We really worship that stuff in this world. It's really most of our gods. In fact, we like to say that the emotional experience is God because then we can associate God with our emotions and we can really worship our emotions and just call them God. This just tends to be an easy thing. But in the end, it's the worshiping of the flesh that we are indulging in. This is what drug addicts do when they feed the flesh to get a feeling. This is what alcoholics do, but it's also what risk takers do. It's also what worship consumers do as they go from church to church and they stay at a church only long enough to feel something. And as soon as the feeling is gone, they move on to the next church. So there's something new. It's just like someone who marries a lot of people or sleeps with a lot of people. It's the same exact thing. It's great when it's new. And once it gets a little stale, we move on to something else. So it'll be great when it's new. It's just feeding the flesh. This is what we do spiritually. It's what we do physically. It's what we do chemically. We're worshiping the body. But when we know that these bodies are not our future, then we know that these chemicals and these sensations are not going to be the thing that's going to determine our future. And we need to be able to deny them. That's Jesus' story for us. In order to do what is right. Because we're learning how to be bodies. But we're not learning how to be in these bodies forever. So even our pleasure is transformed by the knowledge that this too solid flesh will melt and dissolve into a dew. To quote Shakespeare. In the end, the priorities of life are transformed. So there were Christians in the ancient world who could go into the gladiatorial rings and be killed by animals in Jesus' name. And they could endure that because they knew that this was not their future. There are folks who are willing to have a conversation with a neighbor, even though they know if that neighbor doesn't respond well to that presentation of the gospel, they might create a rift in the relationship and now have to live next to someone who hates them. There are Christians who are willing to have that conversation because this is not their future. There are Christians who look in the mirror and hate what they see, but they learn how to live with that because they know that God is making a body that will adequately reflect what they think they should be seeing in the mirror. And so they trust God to give them that in His time, and they don't try to seize it now before the time. And their lives are transformed. This is the gospel of Jesus. I'm going to invite you to stand.